You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. You know, something was really sweet. I got a message from Nico, who is a he's a listener. He's a patron. And you can join Patreon, patreon.com/insideofyou. And amazing kids, family, Zach. Love that kid. But he said he was watching America's Got Talent. And so I checked this clip out. And of course, you know, Simon Callow got emotional. I got a little emotional watching it. But this girl who, you know, faced a lot of adversity, she sang the song and it was beautiful. But more importantly, she said something after the song. She said something that was so profound and beyond her years that I had to rewind it and I had to write it down. I had to write this shit down. Mm-hmm. And it was this. She said, "You can't wait until life isn't hard anymore before you decide to be happy." You can't wait until life isn't hard anymore before you decide to be happy. That struck a chord, man. And I just thought, isn't that what we're always waiting for? We're waiting for, well, once things get a little easier, once life isn't hard, then I'll be able to be happy. I'll be able to get my shit together. It's time now to be happy, even while things are hard, even while things are. So, you know, it goes back to you, me, it goes back to everybody listening. I just, fuck, man, talk about a mental health moment. That was I teared up. I had a little cry there.
What was her talent?
She was a singer. Oh. But I just thought about that. I was like, you know, I got to wait till my anxiety is on track. I got to wait till everything is right before, you know, then I'll feel happy. And it's kind of bullshit. It's like, find ways to be happy now through it all. Mm-hmm. It just hit me. I don't know. Does it not hit you?
No, of course it does. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not that your issues, my issues aren't important and whatever, but in the scheme of things, I guess in life, it's just, you know, I won't dwell on it too much, but you can't wait until life isn't hard anymore before you decide to be happy. And I thought that was really neat. So anyway, welcome to the show. I hope you're having a great week. Great guest this week. Before I get into the guest, the lovely Keegan Allen. If you're here for Keegan, if you're here for just enjoyment, a good interview, please subscribe. Ryan, tell them where they could subscribe and keep supporting the podcast.
Oh, you could subscribe. The podcast is everywhere you can find the podcast, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and you can find us on YouTube. You can watch it, youtube.com/insideofyou with Michael Rosenbaum.
Yes, and what are the handles for Inside of You if you want to follow us?
You can follow at Inside of You Pod on Twitter and at Inside of You Podcast on Instagram and Facebook.
That's right. That's very easy, and we really love that. If you write a review, we love you even more. I have to say, if you go to hello at Inside of You Podcast and leave messages, it's very hard because they get really stacked up with messages and it takes me a couple of months to go through them and sort through them. And I respond sometimes. The big, long-winded emails I kind of absorb and I don't really respond to because it's sometimes too hard. But like short one line, two lines, those are easy to respond to. And but some people feel like they need to tell me a story and so be it. But it's sometimes hard for me to get to it. And you know, just don't expect me to get to it don't expect me to have a response to it always. The Inside of You store, we got some new stuff. We got these awesome journals. I thought that was very appropriate for the podcast that, you know, it's a journal to write your life in, all your shit that's going on in your life. And, you know, I journal every day. And so the little leather journal books, you can get them autographed or you can get them non-autographed. There's also masks, new Inside of You masks, and those are going pretty fast. So are the journals. So go to the Inside of You online store and, in fact, use this code SUMMERROSIE10 for 10% off at the store. SUMMERROSIE10. And in fact, you know, if you want Sunspin stuff from the band, we've got tons of Sunspin stuff. Go to sunspin.com. And you can use the code SUNSPINSUMMER10. And that's going to be 10% off everything in the Sunspin store. The Inside of You store has a bunch of other stuff too. Lex Funko Pops and Smallville lunchboxes and all that shit. I'm going to read a letter at the end from a fan. Thought it was kind of touching. It was one of those letters that I actually read and printed out. But don't forget to join Patreon. I am on it. If you love the podcast, if you're enjoying it, you want to give back to the podcast a little more or something, you can do that by going to patreon.com/insideofyou. I've got a lot of patrons and there's tiers for, I send merch to certain tiers with little notes every couple months. And you get to ask guest questions and you get to do a Q&A with me. So it's, you get to ask me questions on my Q&A segment, which Ryan was a part of last month. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
Yeah. I like that. That was easy. You just asked me questions. You were great at it.
I can read.
You can read.
And if anyone had any doubts, join Patreon and go watch that video.
Today's guest, interesting guy. We talk about Pretty Little Liars. We talked about art, painting,
photography.
This guy's world-class, just a great guy. He's on the show Walker. He's been in tons of stuff. And we had a great conversation. I really think you're going to enjoy it. So why don't we just get right into Keegan Allen?
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Oh, God. You know, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. You know, look, it's Jared Padalecki, your buddy on Walker. He was like, you got to get Keegan on the show. That's one of the first things he said. He must like you because I don't think he'd say that. You guys get along pretty well, huh?
I adore him. I think he's really a special guy, for sure. And it's also really cool, too, because I watched Smallville when I was younger, and I really think honestly you're the best Lex Luthor.
Come on.
No, dude, you actually brought grounded reality to that character. I feel like every other actor that played Lex Luthor was who? Okay, so let's go through who played Lex
Luthor. Oh God, you put me on the spot.
Gene Hackman, right?
Yeah, Gene Hackman, but he played it like in a crazy fun way. He's always my favorite, but yeah, I know what you're saying. Okay, Gene Hackman.
So here's the thing, you leaned into a grounded reality. Gene Hackman played it up. It was campy. He did it. It was interesting, but you were grounded. I felt for your character. I remember being a child and watching that show and being like, oh, wow, Lex Luthor, man.
That's well, you know,
real right there.
Thank you. But I have to I give props to, I mean, the whole production. I've talked about it, but like, you know, from the writing to the director of photography to the special effects to everything, that it just turned into a really great show. But thank you. I mean, you know, you always do your best and you never know how fans are going to react. And I wasn't a big Superman fan growing up. So, but hearing that from someone who watched the show and like, you know, I just really appreciate that. That's nice.
Well, you rose above all of the other actors that attempted to, I mean, obviously outside of the animated versions of this character. I mean, you brought a real humanity to the character. I felt like, you know, Kevin Spacey was a little nuts. Jesse Eisenberg's like, you know, he's fine. But I every time I think Lex Luthor, I think of you. And I think of you pushing your father
off the bat of the building.
It's good, man.
We had some fun. John Glover and I, terrific actor. Well, look, you know, the great thing, the great thing is hearing you say this. It's very kind of you. But it sucks because I can't respond. And like, I can't tell you what I think of other, because then I sound like a dick. But like,
no, you don't.
But no, well, I'm not in terms of like, you know, other actors. I respect all the actors that have played it. But, you know, I think it comes down to, you know, preference. I mean, personal choice, but also like, I don't know. It's
tough. Everything's subjective. I just wanted to say I have a reverence for your work in that. And also, I've been, you know, enjoying your talks, you know, throughout the last however many years that you've been doing the podcast circuit. I loved you on Theo Von. I thought it was very fun and controversial. Very interesting.
Dude, Theo Von, let me tell you about something. I went on Theo Von's show. I walk in there. It's almost like I love Theo, and this isn't knocking him, but it almost was like, you know, I don't know if he was being David Letterman or what he was doing, but I walk in and he's just got a pen and he's writing and he's not really paying any attention to me when I walk in at all, which as an actor, you're like, what the fuck, man? Give me some love here. He's like, hey, man. And he's just kind of doing his thing. Like he's like this really intense interviewer. And I'm like, oh, fuck, Theo. Theo's going method for this, you know, for this interview. And then of course he's like, so tell me about Allison Mack, you know, and starts getting into that right away. And, you know, and I gave him shit because I'm like, hey, come back on my podcast, man. You're hilarious and blah, blah. He's like, yeah, I want to, man. I'm just real busy. And, you know, he's a good guy. But I'm like, dude, you got 2 million hits off that interview with the whole thing with Allison Mack in my interview. Come back on my freaking show. So, but anyway, Theo's one of the funniest people on the planet. Honestly, he is. He's so unique. Even when you ask other comedians who are, you know, my friend Harlan Williams, you know, the guy from Dumb and Dumber, the guy who's like, "You drinking on some of Grandpa's cough medicine there, buddy?"
Yeah.
He goes, "Yeah, Theo Von is really funny, man. I mean, that guy's a freaking character, bud." And he is. He's a funny guy. But look, back, we got to put the direction on you, the focus on you now.
All right, let's do it.
Oh, man, this is scary. First of all, you have a great name, Keegan Allen. Is that your real name?
It's my real name. I know.
Why do I get Michael Rosenbaum and you get Keegan Allen?
Well, it was almost a totally different, very Jewish name. I mean, but my dad changed his last name.
What was his last name?
I actually don't know, because he was very secretive about his last name. So, but I do know that he wanted to have a flow and a last name that was very easy to say. And so, and then my name, which I found out what it meant from Disneyland of all the places.
What does it mean?
Not a very interesting, but you know, one of those, those like things where you put the quarter in and it generates the name thing.
Right.
Like when I was very young, and it's a Celtic name that means little fiery one, which was an ego booster at the age of six.
You're a little fiery one, Keegan.
Keegan, yeah.
Little fiery one. I like that. Were your parents pretty cool growing up? I mean, you said Jewish. Were you bar mitzvahed?
I was not bar mitzvahed. I was actually, well, I had a choice to kind of, my mother's Jewish and my father was Catholic. And I kind of oscillated between religions growing up. But now it's, I'm a bit agnostic, but I'm more spiritual. I'm more into spirituality than the idea of religion now, which is very comfortable.
Nice. And your parents, so they didn't really stick religion on you at all? They kind of let you go your own way?
No, my parents were extraordinary in that they were both artists, so they cared so much about not caring, but in a really logical way, in a way that let me be free. And they supported my art. They supported when I was down, when I was sad. They let me be the person that I wanted to be. And it was an interesting, you know, experience growing up where I saw all my friends being controlled, very controlled and like held down by their parents' constructs of who the parents wanted them to be. And my parents were like, "Look, go do whatever you want to do. If you fuck up, it's on you."
And where was this? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Hollywood.
You grew up in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And that's not easy. You wrote a book about it?
Yeah, I have a photography book called Hollywood Stories and Voices from Foreverland is a love letter to growing up in Hollywood.
Okay, I saw that book. I know what you're talking about now, but it was pictures. So when I heard book, I was thinking something else. But like I saw some of the pictures and everything, I was like, holy crap, this guy does photography and he sings. He's got a song. I mean, and the song's beautiful. That song had to be played. It's called Million Miles Away, right?
Yeah, that a million miles away. Yeah.
And it had to be put in a TV show. You had to get that placed.
Here's the thing about all my music. I'm a hopeless romantic. I love the idea of being in love, and I've always felt that way. And I learned to feel from the movies. I learned to feel from good books and literature growing up, and poems and Shakespeare. And there was something really like haunting and romantic about writing love songs. And so a lot of any kind of music that has been, you know, aggregated into my life from the outside world, it comes through me in like a really like very syrupy, it's like spoon feeding ice cream too much. Like I love music, but I feel like I've like held back a lot of music from releasing it because I feel like sometimes it's a bit too much. Like it's a bit like lame.
But well, you say lame, but like if it's coming from the heart, they always say whatever you're doing, if you have feeling and you mean it, that's when it's the best, right? Whether it's acting or whether it's music. So if it's coming out in your music, maybe you shouldn't hold back and you should just let it go and go, this is what I'm feeling, this is what I'm writing. And people either gravitate towards it or they won't. So
Yeah. I mean, and growing up, I had an interesting relationship with music. My parents, you know, they they introduced me to, you know, music like Bob Dylan and the Grateful Dead and Van Morrison and The Doors, very, very controversial music for a very young person, especially Bob Dylan, which I took to, and I just was obsessed with Bob Dylan growing. I was very young. I'm still obsessed with him to this day, but his music was so interesting to me because, I mean, he absolutely jump-started the era of folk, you know, protester music. And at a time when people's voices needed to be heard, he was creating these beautiful lyrical structure, almost like a rap. Now would be a rap battle. He was doing that. And to me, it was unlike anything I'd ever heard and anything I've ever heard up till now. He was, you know, putting his heart on his sleeve and, you know, millions of other people's hearts on his sleeve when he sang. So that Elliott Smith,
Elliott Smith,
with him growing up.
Tragic, so, tragic ending to
tragic, but just made the music just so much deeper. And oh man, even now you want to have a sunny day and ruin it? Elliott Smith.
Elliott Smith. Nick Drake does that to me as well. But he's kind of soothing.
Dude, you know, Nick Drake is another horrifically just that when you listen to his music and you hear that I mean, there's no other musician like Nick Drake.
No.
Yeah, I mean, you put on any of his albums. Is it Pink Moon?
Pink Moon, yeah.
You put on Pink Moon and it transports you to another, like a it's so cerebral.
Yeah, and it's almost timeless. It feels like it's, you know, you could be listening to something in the 70s, but you could be listening to something in the 90s or now. It does, but it transports you into something just soothing and it's good music. I think that you shouldn't be afraid to do that. I just came out with an album and, you know, I'm 48 years old. I'm not going to be a freaking rock star, but I love music and I try not to think of lyrics so much as like, I have to be so brilliant in these lines and I want people to be, you know, I want to evoke all these. And you just kind of write music and you play it and you sing it and you say what you feel and you know, and I just think that when I listened to that song, I just felt like, yeah, I could tell what you're saying. It's just very, it's how you're feeling. It's just a very, I think that's important though. I think you should continue doing that. I mean, how many,
I will. It's there's, you know, I have had this, you walk the line, you know, with something. I mean, I like to dip my toe into everything creatively. Like right now I'm painting. I'm taking a painting class with one of my favorite plein air painters that I reached out to him and I was like, hey, you know, he's amazing. His name's Jesse Powell. Amazing. Like it'll blow your mind. He's so talented. And with plein air, what's nuts is, I mean, as an actor, you can understand the objective of a scene. You read a script, you go, okay, who am I? What am I trying to say? What is the writer trying to say? How do I marry that? What does the scene warrant? What are the notes? Like all of that is all, it's a topography of thought. But when you're painting something compositionally, you're creating something that you see, it's your perspective. Same thing with acting, but like what's so mystifying about plein air, oil painting, is you can just hodgepodge a bunch of paint in an area and up close, it just looks like nothing. And then you step back and it's this perfect composition of an exact perspective. And it transports you to that moment. And I've been trying to understand that because it's all just shadows and highlights. That's it. There's no, it's all your perspective. It's the perspective that's being kind of like, it's not being forced. It's like the hand of someone else just like being like, here, let me show you this. It's so remarkable.
Yeah. What got you into that? See, so for me, I was going through a tough time. I had like a lot of anxiety. I was dealing with a lot of shit. And I just said, I need to check out. And I went to Connecticut across the country and I checked in for 3 weeks at this place. And, you know, it was just, I had to get my mind straight and I started doing art and I hated art because I didn't realize it. But as a kid, I was this colorblind kid who I just never did well in art class. I was the only kid who got like D's or F's in art. I had a short attention span. I've talked about that, but all of a sudden I hate art. And even going in high school, I'd smell the art, you know, art class. And I'd walk around a different way because I just wanted to get as far away as I could and was hoping I didn't have to take art class. And so I don't want to say forced, but they really told me that it's important to try it. Just try something you don't have to be great at. And for me, I've always had to be great at everything. I feel like I have to prove myself. I have to show everybody how great I am. And with this, I started art, and I started doing it with my friends at the house. I'm not good. I'm not even remotely good, but there's something that takes me away, that just takes me away from the present, or makes me actually more present and disconnects me from sort of all these other external things of, you know, trying too hard and impressing and this. And I noticed that 30 minutes or that hour or whatever it takes, it's just for me, it's just being, and there's something really nice about it. Now, is that why you started doing that?
Yeah. I mean, my mother is a painter. She does watercolor, and that's fascinating to me because it works backwards from oil. You know, you're working on you build on watercolor, you build on oil, but it's reversed. You know, you wouldn't be able to, I mean, you could, I mean, technically put down a darker color and then paint lighter. But what's interesting is that growing up, both my parents were painters, and they did it as like, you know, my dad would do these sprawling paintings with acrylic and oil all over the place. And my mom's doing watercolor paint. My dad was an actor, so he was constantly doing very thespian things in the house and emoting. And, you know, it was a very dramatic upbringing because there, you know, being around two artists, you know, it's chaos. I mean, it's chaos, but there's something beautiful about the chaos. But getting into painting recently has been therapeutic. I've noticed that because of all of the media and the intensity in the world right now, it's very easy to your brain becomes a blender of other people's thoughts and emotions. And, you know, it's very easy to slip into this vortex of energy now that never before has it been this easy. I mean, if you want to feel, you know, complete cosmogonic chaos, you could step into any social media realm right now. You could step into anything and find yourself overwhelmed, you know? So I've been working on like doing meditation because I was having panic attacks over nothing. There was nothing happening. I was just having really bad anxiety, really bad panic attacks. So I've been doing lots of meditation, lots of yoga, lots of painting, playing music, listening to music, taking time just to do nothing, to swim, go on walks.
How much does that help you? How much, honestly, because, you know, go back to your childhood. You said it was a little chaotic. It was dramatic. It was all these things. Do you think was it in a good way, or was it both in a good way and a bad way? Did it create some anxiety? Did you feel stressed? Did you have that teenage angst? You know,
angst. My first book was all my teenage angst, all of it. Life of Beauty was all written. I was teen angst for most of my life until I like hit, I think like 25. And then I was like, oh man, I gotta like figure this out. Growing up, I feel like everybody has the same story in a different way. And my angst growing up lent itself to now finding the peace to know that it was okay to feel down and sad sometimes. And it's okay to feel down and sad even now, but to not linger too far into those feelings and understand that they're just thoughts and feelings. Mm-hmm. And you can be a passenger to those moments. And then here's the other thing, Michael, like nothing really matters. Everything is temporary. And that's the greatest awakening that I had was in my late 20s. I was like, oh wow, nothing is forever. Like everything's temporary. So like to live in the moment and be present in yourself, it helps. But you know, if you're having anxiety and you're having depression, sometimes you have to go a little bit deeper into why, you know.
So. And how did you go deeper?
I did. I have been. I've been really examining. You know, I've had this is a real amazing blessing to work on a show like Walker and have just such an amazing supportive group of people around and a collaborative environment and one where we all feel already like a family. So coming to work, I'm I'm in a very happy place, a very good environment, an environment that promotes creation and promotes creativity in a way that, you know, it allows me then to focus on my off time on things that make me a better person, a better man, a better human. Because I feel like, you know, especially in my life now, I'm in my 30s and I'm just starting to understand when my dad would be like, you just wait till you're older and you'll understand. Like, I'm just now getting to that where I'm like, I see the crest of the light from that conversation in the distance. And I'm like, oh, I'm starting to get it, you know?
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
Judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
You know, it's very seldom, it's rare that, you know, a man, a young guy like yourself has published books and music and been on hit TV shows and, you know, paints and is learning about himself and is more comfortable with himself at such a young age, especially born, you know, growing up in Hollywood. It seems to me that if anything, I should be talking to some guy who's just getting off Coke binge.
It's interesting. I understand what you're saying. I get it. And to some extent, I mean, I feel like I've lived, you know, at some point I've lived a version of that life and it didn't work for me. You know what I mean? It didn't serve me. And I have a lot of friends that have gone down a darker path and thus never returned. And I've seen it, you know what I mean? And I've had it very close to me. So I feel like in some ways that the destruction and the misery created around me kind of taught me a lesson before I myself fell too deep into something. And for that, I'm really grateful. You know, I was kind of given a glimpse into many, many different lives. And I'm just lucky. I mean, you never know, but I'm very lucky at this one singular point.
So you saw, whether it's friends or just people in the industry, you had enough foresight or whatever to acknowledge, I'm not going down this path. I'm not allowing myself to go any further down it. I'm sort of like hindering or lingering in this like area, this gray area, and I've just got to take off now. I've got so much potential. And I've got so much life to live. Is that sort of a conscious thought or something that took years for you to sort of understand?
Yeah, I know. What it is like growing up in Hollywood. That's why I brought up the book earlier. It was like it was a love letter to a town that now, I mean, it feels totally different. But, and I knew at the time when I was photographing Hollywood that it was a period piece. I knew that I had a responsibility as a photographer, as an artist, as in some ways I had a creative muse within me that allowed me to see the temporary nature of Hollywood. And at the time, you know, this was way before any accountability structures were put in place. And I saw so many failings in not only Hollywood, but just in growing up in California in general, and how that shaped me was just being so close to it, like being able to feel the heat radiating off of bad decisions, and being able to step back far enough that I saw the train wrecks, but I wasn't injured too badly from them.
Wow, that makes sense. Yeah, no, it absolutely makes sense. I think that's what happens to all of us. I remember being 13 years old. I think I was 13 years old. I was in eighth grade, and I was really small for my age. And I remember I went over to this kid's house and other kids. I won't mention their names right now. One's in prison. But I remember they were huffing gas. They were just like, and I'm like, what the fuck are you guys doing? And they're huffing gas. Rosenbaum, get in here. Huff some gas. And I was like, no, I can't. I'm allergic to gas or whatever the fuck I said. I don't know. I got it. And then I just remember at this age, I look back, how are they this fucked up? And there's all these. And by the way, two of those kids ended up, you know, being really big bullies and trouble with the law. One guy went to prison. I remember something inside of me, and it wasn't that I had the best childhood, because boy, I did not. But you know, people always have it worse. I mean, you kind of move on. But I remember just leaving, cutting through yards, and going, I don't belong here. This is wrong. No one had to tell me. Something inside of me said, as a 13-year-old boy, this is not right. And that was a gift. I don't know, it was a gift from God or whatever you call it, but as a 13-year-old kid, you succumb to all the, you know, peer pressure and the, you know, people say, come on, Rosenbaum. I'm like, oh yeah, I guess I should do that because they're doing it. And I don't know why, but I just knew that I needed to get the fuck out of there. And maybe that's in a way what happened to you when you're seeing all these things. You're like, you know what? There has to be that moment, that enlightening moment, right?
Oh, yeah, man. It's spirits. I mean, I like to look at it as like, it's a spirit's guidance. Like you have like an inner counselor and you can listen to it. It's a gut. I mean, gut instinct. You know, Gavin DeBecker wrote a really great book about the gift of fear. that's a crazy book. But that we all have this gut instinct that kind of protects us. And you know, even now it's interesting as I'm older. I mean, you always want to see the best in people. And sometimes you'll see something that's malevolent in front of you and you go, oh, no, I can't do that to them. They don't mean it. And like, no, man, my gut usually is like, it'll be like, no, dude, they mean it. It's real. And so that I've always really trusted my gut instinct. Yeah. And it sounds like it was good that you did too. Because you have these split universes where the multiverse theory is really astounding, but you have a split universe where you make a choice and there's a version of you that's living in the other choice right now of choices that you've made. And there's no way to tell if you're good, if it's a good or bad choice. It's just, you know, you're always kind of zigzagging through that reality. So I always like to try and make sure that I'm making conscious decisions that in the long term, I won't regret, but I also, I'll understand why I made them, you know?
But there's always, you know, no matter how good you are.
Yeah.
There's always the bad that's
you always fucking make some mistake for sure.
Well, not only that, I'm thinking, you know, you're doing the right thing a lot of times, and there's some dark thoughts along those ways where you could easily stray from the good and go bad. You're like, you know what? Fucking, you know, fuck it. And it's not like it's all positive thinking. During that positive thought of things that you're doing, I don't know if I'm making much sense here, and you're doing the right things and you continue to do the right things, there's always that dark force that's always little things.
Oh, like, yeah, man. It's just a concatenation of thoughts that... Yeah, I hear you, man. And that's something that, you know, you constantly as a human being, it's like not talked about enough. And I think that's kind of why there's a mental health issue that's rampant in just our whole society. And it spans through urban environment and rural environments, because people are, you know, it's just, what is the quote in Fight Club? Like, our great war is a spiritual war. Like we have, especially being a man right now in 2021, you know, it's something that I want to be the best version of a human being. and I want to keep getting better, and I want to learn from my mistakes. I want to actually not just say it in a false altruistic way on Instagram or
right.
be like, I want to be a better guy. Like I actually do. Like I want to learn from the things that I did incorrectly. And if I'm the only judge of that, I want to be able to understand why I did certain things or said certain things or made certain decisions and then learn from them down the road. And a lot of that, you know, it lends itself to being a better person for myself, not really for anybody else.
Isn't that the truth? Just nailed it. Like we could sit here and try to make, you know, Ryan here, my engineer, and I want Ryan to think I'm a great guy. And, you know, and I want people to look at me and go, oh, he really tries hard and he really loves everybody, but I'm a fuck up. I am a fuck up. I need to believe all the things that some people are believing, and I need to make those thoughts become a reality. I need to work on myself, but also knowing that not being too hard on myself, like that's important, because we are going to fuck up. You know, look, you always hear you have to love yourself first, right? It's like, if you can't love anybody else. So I don't ask that question much, but it's like it looks like you love yourself because you've been working on yourself a lot. And I think that's important.
It took a lot of figuring out like what I was missing. So I felt like I was missing things within myself. I went on this like whole journey, and I have a really great group of friends around me that I very bespoke to self-betterment. And Jared is definitely one of those people as well. Like Jared is an incredibly open source of, you know, you would think someone like Jared would be, you know, he wouldn't get this part. He gets it. And he's so open, and he talks, and he's like a loving man, which is very palpable and wonderful, especially on set working with him and being brothers. It was an immediate click. And I have great friends around me that you know, like, hey, you should read Michael A. Singer's The Untethered Soul. Hey, you should read Gary Zukav's The Seat of the Soul. Hey, you should get into Sadhguru. Hey, you should start doing yoga. Hey, you should start. Like, I have friends that are all about that. And I used to, when I was younger, have friends that were like, here, have a drink. Man, you know, fuck all that. Do this, like, do this, escape this way. And it never helped. You know, it didn't help. It made it actually, it amplified the resistance within me. And so, you know, just recently, especially being here in Austin, I've been able to really focus on not just self-love, but just like understanding myself better and finding peace, because dude, it's so easy to lose control, especially in today's world where you're just alone with yourself and you're being spoon-fed constant chaos, you know?
Constant. You know, what's funny is after this interview, I'm going to ask Suzanne, your publicist, who I've known for years. She was my publicist on Smallville, and she's awesome for working this out. But I'm gonna be like, get his email, because I need to know what I need to read. I want to get through. I want to read the top shit. Don't look. You've read a lot of books. You're a reader. And
dude, you know what you should read? Right, like honestly, we should get off here. Is read James Nestor's Breath. It's called Breath. The New Science of a Lost Art. Amazing.
That's the first book you want me to read.
Actually, actually, you know what? Read Michael A. Singer's The Untethered Soul.
It's an easy read, not too big words
it's
for me here.
It's a super easy read. You could even get it on audiobook and just like zone out to it. It's pretty meditative. And then if you really like that, you can read The Surrender Experiment. That's another book that he did.
You're writing this down, Ryan? The Surrender Experiment? Ryan's going to read this shit too. Ryan, like, we need help here. We need help. Hey,
but here's the other thing, man. Like the other part of it too is you know, I wasn't ready for any of this until I was. And there are people telling me to read and do and work on myself for years and years and years, and I didn't want to. I tried, and I didn't really want it. And like the moment that, and I'm not trying to speak from a place of ego. It's just like it helps me now. I don't know if it will continue to help me. I'm going to keep trying to put in work. But like, dude, it's so amazing when it clicks and you realize that you're so much more than what you think you are without being anything at all. it's just a really great feeling.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, I think the reason that we don't work on ourselves right away when people are like, you read this and do this, you're like, no, because deep down, in a weird way, at least for me, is like, I maybe I still believe this, but I don't believe that I'm fixable in a way, or I don't believe that it will work for me. My mind is different. It's this naivete that is just, it's just not real. It's like, come on, you, even if you have a pre-existing condition, let's say you have some mental illness, they say that even if you have certain things, you can control 40%, 40 or 50%. I mean, it just depends on what the issue is, but I just feel like you have to put the work in. It's just not going to happen. It's like somebody expecting to be a movie star. I'm just going to hang out by Starbucks and Spielberg's going to drive by and he's going to see me. It just doesn't fucking happen. It certainly doesn't happen to me. It doesn't happen to many people. So if you don't actually put the work in, what's going to happen is just, nothing's going to happen is the answer.
Nothing's going to happen. And when you're saying that, you know what you said something really interesting because I thought the same thing. And I've gone through a huge amount of introspection and what you said is like, I don't think I'm fixable or like all of anything like that, man, that you should do some active self-forgiveness and like forgive yourself for buying into the misbelief that you're not fixable and like go deeper into why you feel that way and then clear it and move on because you might be holding on to that and it's probably holding you back from a true version of yourself that you could easily arrive at if you stepped off of that plane of thinking that you were unfixable. If you just arrived at that. Also, dude, another thing that really helped me and it's changed my life, Jared doesn't want to hear a fuck about it, but it's really helpful, is don't eat refined sugars and processed foods. Just do not consume them. And think of your body as a house. Like you wouldn't let just anybody into your house. So don't let just ingredients that you don't know of in your body.
Like, give me an example. Give me an example of some of these products.
Don't eat refined sugar, like cane sugar. Read, you know, understand that there's more than
60 grams for. What about stevia?
Stevia is okay. There's a lot. There's the jury's out on artificial sweeteners, but, you know, there's one. What is it called? There's one that's like pretty good, but it's a laxative. And so you need a diaper if you eat too much of it. But
what's that one?
But I would just don't eat. Try and remove refined sugar from your diet.
Okay.
At all costs. You can have honey. You can have propolis, like bee pollen or like royal jelly if you need a sweet thing
fruit.
To wean you off. Fruit is good, but don't eat it don't eat it after like a certain time. Like find out what, you know, because it's some fruits are pretty high glycemic food. So if you eat like a banana at night, you're going to spike your blood sugar.
Oh, great.
But yeah, man, that'll help a lot with mood and anxiety. I noticed I gave up sugar in 2017, completely. And I was a pre-diabetic. Are you in LA?
I'm in LA. Yeah.
I would go to the Beverly Hills ATM, Sprinkles ATM at 2 a.m. and get 4 cupcakes and eat them on the curbside, sitting on my motorcycle. Like a crazy guy.
Jesus. You know, let me get into really quickly. I want to get into Pretty Little Liars because that was your first big hit. That was the thing that kind of put you on the radar, right? That, you know, I mean, how old were you when Pretty Little Liars started?
I was very young. I must have been. It was 2009. I got the call. I remember getting it and I was so young. I skateboarded to the audition.
So you were 20.
I was 20, yeah.
You skateboarded to the audition. Did you have a fear at all? Did you go in there and not give a shit?
You know, it was the first. So it's interesting. It was like the first. I had gone on so many auditions for so many different things. And I was doing background work on another like kind of teen show. And I remember talking to one of the actors on it and being like, dude, do you have any pointers? And like how to be an actor, like a working actor, like making money, like this doesn't seem realistic. Like, cause I was doing background work. You make like $60 a day or something, just enough to like buy yourself a couple meals before, you know? And he was just like, he looked at me and he's like, honestly, just don't give a fuck. And I'm like, really? That's all it takes?
That's the key.
But what was interesting is I cared so much about, I was going into acting classes and I still care so much. It's interesting because I, as much as I, you're supposed to not, you're supposed to like release yourself from the end result of your work. You're supposed to be present in it. I went in for that audition and I was just, I just had so much fun. I remember having so much fun in that audition. And, you know, they tell you don't wear beanies, don't cover your eyes. I went in with sunglasses and a beanie on. I did all the things you're not supposed to do. And there you go.
That's the key. Did you, 11 years ago, was there Instagram?
We actually, our show is one of those, it was probably the show that kicked off the social media frenzy around live tweeting, around just social media in general, where fans were essentially steering the show's arcs, character progression. I was only supposed to be in 6 episodes. My character dies in the book series. But fans at that time, social media had gotten, you know, was starting to get a fire under it. Fans were demanding that they didn't kill Tobias Kavanaugh, which was my character. And they were just like, do not kill him.
Well, what do you tell the author? What do you tell the guy who writes the book? Say, no, he dies.
Sarah Shepard wrote a book series, and it was, it's this, not to come back in full circle here, but her universe ran parallel until it didn't with Marlene King's version, who she developed and was the showrunner of our, of PLL, along with Oliver Goldstick. And they married the two in certain ways and then divorced them in other ways. And one of the divorce factors was my character living in the, and having a very strong relationship with one of the main characters that was just beautiful.
Were your parents blown away? I mean, are your parents the kind of parents that say, Keegan, we're so proud of you. You're so good.
Yes.
You're so sweet. We love you. They're that.
Just adorable and painfully supportive.
That's beautiful.
And I love them both. My father passed away in 2012. He got to see a glimpse of the, I remember, like, you know, he was an actor himself. He came from, you know, Broadway and very thespian. And you know, he was in Star Trek, and he would get fan mail all the time. He played like a small role in Star Trek 3, and he would get these crazy, amazing fan letters, and he loved it. It was like the happiest that he was when he was answering fan mail for Star Trek. So when we were out one time, because my dad was, you know, my dad was going through some stuff, but we were out spending time together, and someone came up to me from Iraq, and they're like, "We watch your show there," and wow. He was just like, "What the hell? Across the world like that? That's amazing." And I was like, "Dude," and that made me so happy. And it was like a couple of months before he passed away. And he was able to like see the reality of how far reaching this audience was.
That is beautiful. And it actually puts a tear in my eye because I think about, it's just so nice when a father could be, just love his son so much and want to see him be successful and be so, you know, just in awe of something like that, where, you know, it just, for me especially, it's a beautiful thing. Is he, I don't know. It was just the relationship. I could just see it. Like when you were just talking about it, I just envisioned it. I could see it. And just this guy who just cares about you and was like, wow, follow from the other side of the world. How do they recognize you from just, and what that does is that creates this sort of feeling inside you, I'm sure, where it's just like, it just feels good that your dad feels good about what you're doing and what you've like. It just, that's such a fulfilling feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, it is very special. And I had a very close relationship with my parents. And my dad, you know, it's weird. It's like when he passed away, I mean, it was so weird because, you know, the one thing that we would do together is we'd fish together. We'd fly fish together, which is like in itself another art and a craft. That I've been doing it for 31 years and I still suck at it, dude. I like to imagine myself that I'm a master angler at this point. And then I go out on the river and I'm like, what am I doing? Like, why can't I do this? My dad was a master angler. He was so good. He fished for, you know, what, 70 years or something. And so we would go and spend time like that together. But after he died, like I still go fishing and I still almost feel like he's there. It's the weirdest. It's so strange.
He is.
It's comforting.
I believe that. I believe he is there.
It,
It's whatever a wonderful, you believe.
Yeah, yeah. It's a strange thing. It's the one thing that I still can't quite understand. I don't know if it's just my own imagination, and but I don't.
Well,
know.
I, yeah. You know what? My best friend was my grandfather, who died a year and a half ago. And he, by far, he was my best friend. And I mean, I couldn't stop videotaping him from the time I was a kid. I just thought he was the funniest, awesomest guy in the world. And he always golfed, and I never liked golf. He would take me, and I just never. And during this pandemic, for the first time, I said, fuck, well, golf's really the only thing I could do. So I would, I'd go golf, and you know, you're with one guy and you're separated and you're social. It's a sport that you could play. You got your own ball, you're touching your own balls. That didn't sound right. But, you know, for me, I always feel like Irv's with me. And I feel like there's some kind of awesome, it's just this feeling where I'm like, my grandfather always wanted me to golf. Fuck, why didn't I golf as much with him? And now I just feel like there's this essence like, Irv, here I go. Could you help me out? Apparently not, because I'm sucking up. But there is a nice feeling, and I don't know, whatever it is. It's just like you said, spirit. You said you're more spiritual, and you know, who's to say what's out there?
Right. I mean, especially during quarantine, I really leaned into my fears. I was very afraid of the dark. I had a really irrational fear of the dark. Actually, I was doing a podcast right before quarantine. And that's why I have this mic, and the whole, you know, setup is, you know, it's wonderful to have for Zooms.
Yeah.
But my podcast immediately became dated and strange because I took a hiatus from my season one from my podcast. It was really great ratings, had millions of listeners. It was awesome. But then I realized that I was talking about aliens. I was talking about weird stuff. And I wanted to really gauge my audience into what I've learned that has made my life better. And one of the things was I was afraid of the dark, and I was afraid of the forest. And I had a house in the forest that I was renovating for most of 2018. And over a quarantine, I moved into it and overcame my fear of the dark and the forest. And now I'm like, I feel like a completely different person. And a lot of that had to do with breathing, oddly enough, and sleeping by. That's why I said James Nestor wrote a really great book about breath. Because I was having these hypnopompic and hypnagogic hallucinations when I would wake up because I was breathing through my mouth because I wasn't practicing breathing through my nose when I went to bed. It's so weird. Anyway, but I've gone through all these things, and I wish my father was around to see it. I know he is technically by like the spiritual realm and Kami and all that stuff. But like there is something to be said about like, you know, or Herv, it's like, it would be so nice to just have one day now and be like, dude, look at this. Look at this. You know,
I think you'll have that one day.
Yeah. I mean, that's the,
I mean, people could laugh at that and they could scoff, but like, why is it so incredulous to think that maybe you will see somebody after these people who are such cynics who just talk, you know, they're just as bad as the extreme religious people, in my opinions, the people who just throw religion at you and you're going to die if you don't. They're just as worse as these. You could be atheist. I don't know if I believe the word atheist, but you could be whatever you want. I don't care what you are. But I don't like when they sort of scoff or make fun of people for believing that. You know, my father, I think, is, you know, the spirit of him is still with me. You know, and they can make fun. I just never understood that. And, you know, whatever helps you get through life. And, you know, the biggest joke would be when you finally pass or go to the next realm, it'd be like, ah, see, look, there's dad right there, you fuckers. You know, nobody knows. Yeah. You don't know what's after, you know, life after death. You don't know what, nobody knows anything. No. I mean, now all of a sudden it's like the government has these things with the aliens and the UFOs, and come on, it's just a matter of time. We're going to probably see aliens within the next 2 years. They've known these fucking aliens have been here for years. Trust me.
I know. Does anybody go on Clubhouse anymore? For sure. There's some crazy stuff.
So is your podcast available again now?
I'm working on it. You know, I'm
what's it
revamping
called?
It's called Foreverland Podcast.
Foreverland. So you guys look for that once he's ready to bring that back. This is called Shit Talking with Keegan Allen. This is rapid fire. So just really quick. Emily S. These are my patrons out there. They get to ask some questions. Emily S. Have you been doing, what have you been doing to stay sane during the pandemic?
Yoga. Meditation. I almost slammed myself in the face.
Painting.
Painting.
Nico, what's the best way you found to deal with stress?
Meditation.
Painting.
And playing. Yoga. And honestly, too, I would say meditation and playing a very calming video games.
Leanne P., who are some of your personal heroes?
Oh, man, my mom, my dad, my uncle, my aunt, my best friend Brett, my best friend Ryan, my best friend Brock.
Wow.
Jared. Jared's amazing. Jen, Genevieve Padalecki. They're just all really great. My manager, Conrad.
Look at that. You have good people around you.
Sadhguru. He's great.
Sophie.
Mark Hyman. Sorry, I could keep going.
It's like your Oscar Awards speech. One more. If I'm forgetting anybody. Sophie M., I'm going to just simplify this question. Did you audition for Walker? Did you get asked to audition, or did you just get an offer?
Yeah, you know, I auditioned, and I am so happy that I got to meet Anna Fricke in the room. She's the showrunner of Walker, and get to meet Lindsay and be able to do like probably one of the last network tests before this pandemic. I mean, I'm a theatrical guy, so I loved the process. Not a lot of actors love that process. I loved that process with such a passion, dude. I had so much fun. It was crazy.
That's great, because it's also important. Like, you know, you guys out there, you think, you know, sometimes actors get offers. I've had offers where it's better when you can audition and you know what they like, and you got the audition, you got the part, because you know what they want, and you go to set and you know. When you get an offer, you go to set and you're like, I hope they like what I'm preparing here. And if not, mm-hmm. you've got to make a complete 180 or whatever. So it's kind of frightening. And I lost a job because it was just like, oh, I was doing something that they just weren't, you know, it's because I didn't audition. It was a straight offer. And, you know, that was tough. So, Olga C, name one movie you'll never watch again.
Oh God.
That's too hard, isn't it? I can name 50 just off Shudder.
You know, honestly, can week. I tell you something really spooky? I got, along with, you know, doing all the self-help stuff, I get into deep YouTube video pits and just the worst. Like, I used to think that there were movies that would never shock me. There's like a whole list of movies that are online that even just researching them just turn your stomach. So just, I would say honestly, a movie that I would never watch again is Cats, the musical.
I didn't see it. Don't. You know, this has been fantastic. I didn't know you, and yet now I want to know you more. Like, this is just,
dude,
like,
we should do another podcast and get into more stuff.
I'm not kidding, because this is just the beginning. It feels like, okay, I need to do some reading. I need to do some work on myself, and then I need to talk to Keegan again. You know what I mean?
No, man, I enjoyed it, man. I honestly appreciate you, and I have such a reverence for your journey that you've been through. And God, man, I mean, your Smallville is a total interesting. I mean, talk about picking apart not only just Warner Brothers making that show in general, and like how crazy ahead of its time it was, but also just the how each actor has what it meant to each actor and what it did to each actor. It's such an interesting show.
It took my life into a completely different direction. I was mostly playing, you know, I was doing some comedic performances, and I think I just at the same time did Sorority Boys and, like, you know, some, you know, I think I did Sweet November was right before that. So I was doing some drama too. I did Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. But when I really got Smallville, that jumped me into like, oh, serious actor guy. And my friends would make fun of me. They're like, you're Lex Luthor, dude, you're such a goof. How are you? I'm like, because you can't be, if I was a serious guy, that character probably would have been the death of me. I have to, once they say cut, I'm laughing, farting, doing whatever to get out of that character. And it took time for like people like John Glover, Tony Award winner, who was my father, who's just amazing, to understand. And one day he goes, I know what you're doing now. I go, what am I doing? He goes, you're being Michael so you can then be Lex, and you're being Michael to annoy me off camera because Lex annoys Lionel. And he has this whole theory about this thing, and I'm like, I don't know, I think you're thinking too hard. I just don't like to be Lex when I'm not Lex. But look, when do we watch Walker? It's on CW. What nights?
It's on CW, and it streams on CW the next day. But I believe it's a Thursdays at 8/7 Central on the CW. But after season one finale, it goes to HBO Max, which is really cool. I could be saying all this wrong, but I mean, just I'm really excited about it, man. It's a really cool show, and it's a real departure from what people thought it was going to be. And I think the more that people dive deeper into the root of this story, the more it hits home with a really grounded and painful story about loss and dealing with loss, which, you know, is just ever present in Jared's character, ever present in the Walker family, ever present in all of the arms that reach out from all of the different character storylines and plot points. And it's truly a remarkable show to work on, and a dream job for sure.
And weren't the ratings like for the premiere episode like just unbelievable?
I heard that we did really well, and I'm so happy to hear it, because obviously, like, I want to keep working on this. I want to keep this. I want to get to know Liam better, but I also am so excited that people are enjoying the story and seeing it from so many different perspectives and holding on to different. I mean, everything about it is just so fun to work on, man. I'm like such a fan of the show. I watch it. It's just so not That's like awesome. Me. I mean, I'm just now starting to rewatch some, like, there's been a resurgence of Pretty Little Liars stuff, you know, where you could stream it. And I've been kind of rewatching it and being like, oh my God, I don't remember any of this. I don't remember anything about this. So it's been fun to you know, kind of sort of dip my toe into that. But I watch Walker, and I'm a fan of the show as well as as an actor on it.
Yeah. Well, hey guys, check out Walker. It's Thursday nights on the CW. And I mean, look, this guy's Keegan. This has been a real treat. Again, you know, sometimes you don't know your guests. You don't know where things are going, and you're like, oh, okay. But then I just immediately was like, wait a minute, this guy's really interesting. He's got a story, and I love the relationship with your parents and the love they gave you, and that you did go through a lot of shit, that you were raised in Hollywood, but you turned out to be a great guy. And you've done the work, and you're still doing the work. And I really appreciate you sharing your story with us.
Thanks, man. You're a mensch. Dude, appreciate you too.
You too. Thanks for allowing me to be inside of you, and we'll talk again. Thanks, man.
I was waiting for that.
Another good conversation with someone I didn't know, and I always like that, meeting someone for the first time and then getting to know them in the brief time that we have together. So thank you, Keegan Allen. I hope you guys enjoyed the podcast. Please subscribe. You can subscribe on YouTube and Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, all that. Write a review, and our handles are at Inside of You Pod on the Twitter, at Inside of You Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. And I really appreciate your support. Go to the Inside of You store if you want the new merch, code SUMMERROSIE10, and a bunch of great stuff. And also, if you can go to sunspin.com if you want any Sunspin stuff, it's Sunspin Summer 10 for 10% off. So I'll start out with this lovely letter from Paul. Hey, my name's Paul. I'm a huge fan of yours, and of course, Smallville, Now Your Podcast. I'm 42 years old, a former Marine, and that's where I want to thank you. I served in the Marines for 3.5 years, been to Iraq, Afghanistan, where I blew out my knee and had to leave service. I have PTSD and had to learn how to cope with it, but I started listening to your podcast in the beginning of the year, listening to all the movie stars, etc., having mental health issues, stress and anxiety, and how you go through this as well helped me out. It relaxes me to listen to how your guests deal with it. I like how you tell how your life goes and all those stories. I could tell you that you do help people with your podcast and that you are a very funny and good person. Please keep doing it. Thank you. Really, you might have saved a life or two. A fan named Paul. Well, Paul, that means the world to me, and that's why I wanted to read your letter. You know, I do what I can. I didn't think I was doing anything with this podcast other than just talking to people. And it wasn't until I started getting letters and comments or people came up to me at conventions that I started realizing, wait a minute, the podcast is helping these people. Well, how am I helping anybody? And I think just, you know, trying to be honest and trying to, you know, get things out of my guests that help all of us maybe it's selfish. Maybe I just try to get something from the guest for myself, and in return, it actually goes to everybody out there. But I'm glad it helps you, and I'll keep doing it as long as I can. And thank you, Paul. Thank you for the letter. If you want to join Patreon, join the wonderful family, the community that keeps getting bigger and more loving. And you don't really know what it's about until you join. So I recommend it. I'll shoot you a message when you join. Just go to patreon.com/insideofyou, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. I love all my patrons. And right now I'm going to read their names. So here we go.
All right.
Nancy D, Mary B, Leah S, Trisha F, Sarah V, Little Lisa, Yukiko, Jill E, Brian H, Lauren G, Nico P, Robin S, Jerry W, Robert B, Jason W, Apathian, Kristen K, not to be confused with
Kristen Crook,
Amelia O, Allison L, Lucas M, Raj C, Joshua D, Emily S, CJP, Samantha M, Jennifer N, Jackie P, Stacy L, Carly H, Carly S, Jen S, Jamal F, Janelle B, Tabitha 272, not to be confused with
Kristen Crook,
Ashley. You bastard. I think Tabitha 272 just sticks around because she likes to hear that.
Oh, all right. Tabitha 273.
I think so.
All right. We'll just
feed
that.
We'll just feed it every month. Ashley Ryan, Kimberly E, Mike E, Eldon Supremo, 99 more, Ramira, Santiago M, Sarah F, Chad W, Liam P, Ray A, Maya P, Maddie S, Kendrick F, Ashley E, Shannon D, Matt W, Belinda N, Kevin V, James R, Chris H, Dave H, Samantha S, Spider-Man Shea, Sheila G, Ray H, Tabitha T, Tom N, Suzanne B, Liliana A, Michelle K, Marcus W, Hannah B, Michael B, Talia M, Michael S, Andrew T, Betsy D, Claire M, Liz J, Laura L, Chad L, Rochelle, Nathan E, Taylor K, Marion S, Meg K, Janelle P, Trav L, Dan N, Diane R, Ajeda, Lorraine G, Corey M, Veronica K, Big Stevie W, Kendall T, Carol D, Sandy B, Angel M, Eric C, Rhiannon C, Stephen M, Corey K, Super Sam, Emily C, Sherry S, Coleman G, David C, Michelle A, Matt W, Liz L, Jeremy C, Andy T, Cody R, and Chris E. Those are the lovely Patreons. You could join Patreon, patreon.com/insideofyou. I hope you enjoyed this podcast, and please continue listening. I'm going to put on my smaller glasses now so I don't look completely crazy. But I wonder if, like, ever after we're done recording a podcast, maybe not today, but like right when we're done recording it, while things are converting, we just go up the street, a little 10-minute there and back, take a walk.
Interesting.
Maybe we'll do it.
You do live in the Hollywood Hills of California.
Yes, Michael Rosenbaum here from the Hollywood Hills in California.
And Ryan Taylor from the Hollywood Hills of California.
Give a little wave to the camera. Thank you for joining me again. I love doing this, and thank you for allowing me to be inside of each and every one of you. I hope you have a glorious week. Be healthy. Do something good for yourself. Try to love yourself a little bit. I'm trying to do that. And all right, I think that's it.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.